CJLO 1690 AM. What you just heard there was some Vision Video with a track called Never Enough, which is their latest single that they put out in March, right actually ahead of them performing at South by Southwest and going on this long, long tour that they are currently on. It has been, I miss them because I'm dumb and didn't even think about it. Here's what happened. You're going to think this is sad, but I'm choosing to think that you're going to think it's funny. I saw an ad for them playing here at Bar La Ritz, and I was like, oh, that's good. I'm going to see if they can come in and like do a session. It'll be a whole thing. And I read it as being in May, right? Like May 26th. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that gives me plenty of time. And here we are. And I looked it up, like, at the beginning of this week, only to find out that they had played April 26th. So very good at reading is this guy and interpreting numbers. So apologies to Vision Video for not promoting their show or asking them to come into the studio, because I wanted them to do that and maybe do a session, because I don't think we've had a goth band come in and do stuff, so that would be kind of cool. Anyway, apologies to them. And before that, that track, Never Enough, you got to hear the first part of an interview I did with them at South by Southwest down in Austin. And you know what? Let's just keep rolling with this. Keep rolling with this interview. Now, we've already heard about, you know, EPs versus LPs. Let's listen in and hear what their thoughts are on social media, because you may actually know Vision Video from Goth Dad, which is, if you would like to look it up, you can probably just type in Goth Dad and that will show up on TikTok. And that is what I am referencing when I start talking about TikTok here. So go bring that up and have it ready for, you know, when the commercials are on or after the show, and you can watch all of that. So here's part two of the interview with Vision Video. Keep it locked. CJLO 1690 AM. This is Grade A Explosives South by South Recap. Recap number two.
Speaking of short attention spans, you've garnered some attention over the TikTok that I understand that people are on. Do you think that TikTok has gotten to a point where it's necessary for bands to have, or is it just kind of an added addition?
I think it is to some effect. I feel like garnering a following really happens in the initial phase of like creating, you know, a band and whatnot. I feel like that definitely happens almost entirely online now. So whether it's through TikTok or like Instagram or whatever like social media platform, you know, it is, it's absolutely how we became a full-time band. But it's also like, having toured aggressively for the past like 2.5 years, I feel like it still is a very much so like grassroots thing, that if you go out, as long as the shows are booked well, there's promotion done around it, and you're like anchored to like good local acts and things like that, like some just smart touring and booking in general, then your band will grow if you put on a really good show. Mm. That's like the caveat. Like, you suck live, but if you're a good band and you're tight and you like and you're passionate about it, I truly believe now that like touring is still arguably one of the best ways to gain a following, gain exposure. I think there's like moderation and balance that you have to have between online content, which is such a it almost feels like roulette now. It's like, you know, you're just like posting things and like maybe it'll get some traction, maybe it won't. And I feel like these social media platforms, they just like take advantage of artists. They let you build a little bit of a following, but then, okay, yeah, we have 580 whatever thousand followers on TikTok. Well, I'm lucky if I post one thing and maybe 5% sees that. That's a good day. Unless I pay for it, and I refuse to do it.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Meta and TikTok don't need any more money. They just don't.
Exactly.
Although they act like they do. Oh, the poor, struggling corporations.
They ask you every time you open the damn app, you know, you can promote this post, and more people will see it. Yeah, not my style.
Going back a bit, you're all from Athens or around there. Mm-hmm. I've talked to bands from there, and I was, well, it's been a while, but we'll just say pre-pandemic, I spoke with bands, and they were saying about how the scene is really strong in Athens, which I didn't expect.
Yeah.
Is that still the case? Has the pandemic affected that?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up there, more or less, and I feel like back in the early 2000s and the 2010s, it was very strong, and it definitely took a hit from the pandemic, but it feels like it's recovering pretty well. I mean, we lost some really good venues and things like that, but I don't know. I mean, my participation as a musician is really post... Well, not really post... I guess we started before the pandemic, but, you know, most of my interactions to date have with that scene have been as a musician after, you know, the lockdowns. Ooh. Before it was more just like a music appreciator, but like Ryan, you know, was playing music in that scene for quite a long time.
Yeah,
so he probably
a lot before the pandemic. That exactly you said. I feel like 2010s, earlier 2000s, it was like the place to be in the Southeast, I think, for local bands. And then things kind of started loosening up, and then after the pandemic, I feel like it was really hard. I was working at a venue that was pretty iconic, staple to the scene, and it completely shut down. And that was like a place for a band like us. It's like a safe place for, you know, metal and post-punk, punk, and that was kind of gone. So after that, some other venues have kind of taken the reins and stepped up, which is great. And I think now things are starting to like grow again. So
yeah, that's
positive. Yeah.
That's been Montreal, my experience too. Like there have been specifically like not genre focused, but more genre concentrated, I guess, venues shut down. And so now it's like there's a lot less of them, but there's been a large push of like less than legal venues will go with, which feels like I don't understand how they are still able to operate. Like, there's no way that people don't know about them. It's very strange. I don't understand. Is that a thing in Athens? Are there venues that are like
house shows?
Less
have always
legit?
Been a very important part of the culture there.
Yeah.
So I actually don't know if it's still strong there nowadays. Y'all would
there
know.
Are a few here and there, but not really as many. They're like kind of like DIY, like backyard shows, or like, you know, maybe on like a Sunday someone will do like a pop-up for like vintage clothes and like some food, and like some bands will play it. But I don't really think, as far as like advertised house shows go, like it's not really word of mouth either from what I've heard, but I don't, I'm not out all the time anymore, so I don't really...
Back like 15, 20 years ago, it was pretty common still. Obviously, like there's actually a book called Party Out of Bounds, which is about like REM and B-52s and Pylon, that college radio rock scene in the late 70s. And the interesting thing when I read that book that really caught my attention was like, fact that back then there were no real music venues other than the 41. So basically everybody was like going to house shows all the time. That was all there was. And like nobody went to bars. Like everybody went to parties at people's houses. So yeah, I think it's like still kind of a thing in Athens. It's just like not as important because the sort of cultural landscape of Athens has changed so much. Like a lot of artists and locals have effectively been priced out of Athens because there's just like this massive gentrification.
Tales all the time.
I mean, like UGA, the University of Georgia, I actually went to school there and I graduated in 2011. That was like the last year that it was like kind of reasonably easy to get into that school. They dramatically raised their requirements to get in, and that brought in all these like very affluent kids that have been through prep schools and all this sort of thing. And with that came parents buying up all the homes to make Airbnbs and all this dish. So basically now we're like my first apartment, you know, given this a long time ago, it was like $600 for a 2-bedroom. Now a single like room anywhere is at least $1,200.
Jesus.
So it's, you know, doubled or really quadrupled, I guess, in a sense for a room. So it's crazy. So, yeah, like, I mean, I don't want to be, like, classist or whatever, but, like, rich kids typically don't want to go to, like, a house show or a punk, like, a, like, scuzzy punk band.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So.
Although I do know a lot of, like, skid punks who, you know, they can fall back on some family money if they want to.
There's always,
I think that's always a classic, right? Like,
saw that meme a few days ago from the hard times.
Yeah.
I don't want any of these kids here at the punk show to know that my parents are rich or whatever. I'm trying to hide that. Yeah,
people don't choose what they come from.
Exactly.
And I just think that, like, the way you represent yourself matters, like, insofar as, like, if you act like you're struggling so hard or something, and then, like, in reality you're like, hey, Mom, I need more money. Like, it's just, like, it's just lame. I don't know. Just be real about it.
Yeah. I don't care who you are. If you're in support of what it's about and what we're doing, then I don't care where you come from.
Yeah.
Would it be all right if I leave a little early? I don't want to let you down. I'm just off tonight with my heart on fire, your name lingering on the tip of my tongue. Sometimes the faces of the dead seem to be the only friends that stay. And the warmth inside my bed is softening away like a fleeting memory of you. We're singing out to burn it down and let it die tonight, and I think we might just be alright.
That are on the South By roster, well, I mean, before it blew up entirely, where you actually label yourself as goth. And this is something that has been interesting to me because I've been looking over it for the past, like, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And bands seem to be very reticent to apply that term to themselves.
Yeah.
They want to rely more on post-punk and whatever that is.
Yeah.
Why did you kind of choose to jump in into it?
I mean, for me, it's like a matter of sort of participating in the subculture that I've grown up with. You know, I've been like sort of in that scene for over 20 years now. And, you know, when you look back at, like, I'm a huge music history nerd. I read a lot of books about this stuff. So when you look at first wave goth music, which, you know, arguably that, like, you know, late 70s to early 80s scene where you had that sort of weird post-punk music that was getting darker and stranger and just a little bit more, like, abrasive. But it took place in many different facilitations. It wasn't just, like, one specific thing. And nobody in that time was calling it goth. I mean, yeah. it was just music. It was, like, post-punk or, like, death rock in L.A., you know, new romantic in England. And, like, there were a million different names for these similar ideas that were starting to coalesce around what we consider goth, you know, today. But, you know, by the time that the media had a name for it, all those artists were so groundbreaking and wanting to do their own thing that they, like, sort of rebuked that name because they were like, yeah, we don't want to label this as anything. It's just sort of music. It's what we're making. It's art. But I feel like once you get past that first wave and you're moving into the 90s and onwards, like, there was the goth scene. Yeah. There was this sort of goth subculture. You know, you go to goth night.
Yep.
That's the staple of the subculture. It's, yep, like going to the dance party at some fogged out, yep, you know, totally dark club where they play goth music. And, you know, obviously, like, that definition is going to, like, totally change from one person to the next. And people have been arguing about this crap on the internet ad nauseum for, like, decades now. And it's such a tired thing to, like, even argue. And to be completely honest, I don't really care about whether we're real goth music or not. Because to me, if you want to call it post-punk, if you want to call it goth, if you want to call it whatever, like, I don't really care. I just know that what we do fits within that world, and it helps, in a sense, to keep the scene going, to just call it, like, kind of what it is, in a way. It's not a big scene. It's not a huge, yeah, there's not, like, an overwhelming demand. Like, metal has, like, tons of people that are into it. Punk still is, like, very popular, but goth is kind of a niche thing. It always has been. So you have to, I don't know, I feel like you've got to keep it going, you know, you got to keep it undead, so to speak.
But there has been a pretty big resurgence in kind of the sound.
Yes.
Especially as of late. I mean, yeah, you have things like, you know, even things that you kind of don't expect, like Chelsea Wolfe, Emma, yeah, Ruth Rundle, like, exactly, things like that that are, yeah, that are pushing through. Is there something that you think might be, like, a root kind of cause as to why that sound is kind of prepped up and gone into things?
Yeah. I mean, I think, especially now, I would argue, like, we are right now in the fourth wave of, like, goth music. You know, you have the first wave in the late 70s, early 80s, second wave in the 90s, third wave in the early 2000s with bands like Interpol and, you know, all that kind of, like, very, it's like post-punk but gothy stuff. And now we're in this, like, kind of fourth wave with, like, so many bands that are doing really well. I truly believe that it's the strongest it has been ever since the first wave now, specifically because of what's going on in our world.
Mm.
And, like, economic circumstances are, like, everything is so similar to the 80s, actually. If you look at economic disparity of wealth, like, the middle class is eroding because of far-right policies and establishment policies. You know, there's this, like, ubiquitous threat of nuclear war, like, world war, against the boogeyman out in the east, and there's, like, horrible things that are happening that the government is funding, and then they're lying about it, or they're, like, mm-hmm, obfuscating it. And I think that people gravitate towards things through pop culture, through the media that they consume, the art that they consume, that sort of mirrors the world that they live in, because it's, like, to me, that's all that art is about, is, like, finding a connection to feel like you're understood and accepted and in a community of people that get that sentiment. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, like, tough times and scary times, especially, breed these sorts of things. That's what I chalk it up to. And it's just damn good music, too. So.
if we're talking about scary times, let's get to the, I guess, the elephant of this festival. Here we go. And this might be, I think this will be kind of a unique perspective because I know that you served in the military.
Yeah.
And so let's just go where this is.
Sure.
What's kind of your thoughts about the bands pulling out of this?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's great. Honestly, I think it's awesome for any band to do any level of activism around South by Southwest, whether it's pulling out completely or in other manifestations of protest. For example, we were well on our way to here from Athens, and we found out, like, none of us had any idea about Raytheon and all this, like, crazy military-industrial complex sponsorship until literally the night before, and we were already, like, on a show on the road, well into the drive. So we got up the next morning, and we said, okay, here's our options. We can go home and bow out and make a post about it on social media.
Right.
That's, like, the only form of that protest is just going, yeah, we're not doing this. And it takes a tiny piece away from South By, but it's a part of a larger collective
right.
of people pulling out, which I think is a totally valid and admirable form of protest. And my hat's off to all those bands that did that. The other thing that we discussed was, hey, okay, we're going to lose money whether we do it or not. So if we pull out, that money just sort of gets absolved into the South By's whatever fund.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get paid. And that's fine. If we go, though, what we can do is we can take every cent of that $1,250 of performance fees that we were getting collectively, and we can donate that to an aid organization that supports not just Gaza and Palestinians in Gaza, but refugees in all theaters of the globe. So we decided to donate that $1,250 to an organization called Rescue International, which I've been donating to for years whenever I can, because they are amazing. They're a totally transparent organization that do incredible, unbiased work for people in need because of conflict zones. And then we basically said, we're going to lose the money no matter what. So let's at least donate it. And then let's go and speak openly and actively on stage against South By and against the decisions to force artists into these positions, you know. And we even said, okay, well, I don't want to make this about profit. Like, we have to pay our bills.
Right.
And we're full-time musicians, but we don't make, you know, we're living on thin margins.
Like, musicians don't get paid millions of dollars.
We're not a huge band. And this, like, sometimes I feel like people have this concept that because we have, like, a large social media following,
that translates
somehow we're
making,
like, a ton of money. That is distinctly and categorically false. But on top of that, I didn't want it to be like, okay, well, let's at least go sell merch and, like, make money. So we said, let's also take 10% of our merch sales, and we'll donate that as well in good faith. And, you know, hopefully we just, like, break even with the travel costs associated. But, you know, the thing that pisses me off the most about it, other than the inherent sponsorship and, like, having these military industrial complex companies, is the fact that South by Southwest has put artists in this position where we're having to make these decisions. And it's, like, almost insurmountably difficult to just be an artist of any kind, but especially musicians, I feel like now it's just so hard to get by. So it's just really shameful. But I think it also just speaks to the fact that, like, this is the topic du jour, and, like, there's a lot of attention around the boycotting of South By, and I think that's valid and important and great. But people also have to remember that, like, it's in every facet of our society.
Yeah.
Like, military sponsors so much stuff.
Yeah, it is odd that, like, because, you know, I'm from the States, too.
Right.
I'm from Pennsylvania, so, like, when I heard that, like, the Army was sponsoring South By, I was like, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Like, isn't the Army, hasn't that been, like, the case for everything? Isn't everything somehow related to it?
Any large gathering of people, you will typically see some sort of, like, military recruiting booth or whatever. And, you know, I'm like, a little less upset about military recruitment stuff. I mean, I don't love it.
It's the Raytheon stuff, really.
It's the companies that are profiting off of warfare that really gets me. I mean, there shouldn't be any of it, but it's, you know, making money I truly believe that any company that profits off of warfare should be abolished. It should be made illegal. And I think that the sort of industry machinations of war, because I mean, you have to have a military. I mean, unfortunately, it's altruistic and naive to believe that you could not have any form of military in America. But I believe that all that should be socialized. It should be made a part of the government and solely the workings of the government. That way, it's controlled completely, and there is no pressing for profit. Which, when you bring warfare and capitalism together, they're going to find reasons to use all this stuff. They're going to find reasons to use the bombs, well, to sell the bombs.
It's just like any of it, like the prison industrial complex, exactly. Too. Like, yeah. Private prisons? Who thought that was a good idea?
Right.
Somebody who's clearly an evil person.
Yes.
But I mean, I guess that's kind of where we are just in the U.S. And I guess as it continues, the world at large, like,
right.
We're in... I think we're even beyond late-stage capitalism at this point. It's crazy where it's at.
It's the decline. We're in the death knell of it, I think. Because, there's so many aspects of it that are, like, shockingly, blatantly apparent, but nothing is being done. Like, climate change, like, anthropomorphic climate change is, like, absolutely happening before our very eyes, and we're seeing the world shift in that way. Nothing's being done about it.
And you have people that are actively saying, no, that's not true. That's not happening. Like, what's happening here?
And that's actually causing wars to happen. Like, the civil war in Syria, that was almost entirely caused because of farmers losing crop yields because of lack of rain in these regions where they grow these really specific crops. And everybody started to move into the cities. And al-Assad was, like, crushing these resistance groups of people just asking for assistance from the government because he was giving it to all of his, like, family and friends. So that kind of thing is going to keep happening. And it's going to start happening in places like that we don't normally associate with, like, civil war or strife or, you know.
Well, there's malaria in Florida now. Like, yeah, I mean, that's where we're at.
Cool.
Like,
great.
It sounds good. We're in a good place.
Yeah.
Oh, no. We've made this real dark. Hold on. Let me try. This goes against the ethos. But let me try and brighten this up.
Yeah.